What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about my thoughts on the most recent Sony State of Play and Nintendo Direct. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode with my news catch of the week. Gamers, this past week we had two pretty awesome digital events from both Nintendo and PlayStation. And I gotta say, there was just a lot from each event that I was pretty ecstatic for. And I'm going to start out this segment in the show with talking about what I was just really eaten up from the Nintendo Digital Direct. And first off, from that event, I got to talk about the remastered Tomb Raider trilogy. Now, I'll be upfront and just say I'm not going to purchase this. I also will be upfront and say that it was announced on the Switch, but it also was confirmed to be coming for other consoles as well. But the Switch event is where it was first shown off. So I just wanted to touch base and speak to it because I do think it's actually pretty cool. They're still revisiting these classic games. But the reason why I'm not going to, I've already beaten Tomb Raider 1, Tomb Raider 2. I got so far into Tomb Raider 3, never completed it. So you may ask, well, why don't you get it to play through Tomb Raider 3 again? And you wouldn't be wrong for asking that. The only problem is Tomb Raider 3, if you never played it, that was one of the most frustrating games out of the entire series. And, you know, I don't mind a challenge, but just thinking about that game and all the different things that I've already put into it and done, I just have a lot of other experiences, as I've talked about numerous times on the show, that I'd probably be better suited to put my time's focus on. But either way, I still thought it was pretty cool, kind of a surprise, keeping Tomb Raider as a franchise and as a series name alive in the community until we can finally see and get what this next main Tomb Raider game is going to be on current gen tech. That I'm absolutely frothing at the mouth for. Now, a lot of what was in this Nintendo Direct, honestly, was really a lot of remakes and remasters, but I'm okay with it because a lot of these games are ones that I was not able to see to completion or even get a chance to play in previous years. So the first one I really want to touch on is Super Mario RPG Remake. Now, don't get me wrong, I did play Super Mario RPG back on the day of the original version on Super Nintendo, and I absolutely loved it back then, but I never beat it. Not to mention, we're talking probably 30 years since this game released originally. So any kind of details of story or anything like that, I could not tell you the first thing, to be honest with you. So it would be like I'm playing it for the first time. And I will say this is a game, unlike Tomb Raider Remastered, that I do plan on at least keeping my eyes on the probability of me getting it. Because again, I never actually saw it through to completion, and it's almost as if it's a new game for me. Plus, it just looks fantastic, just graphically and everything else. I am super stoked to hopefully get some time with Super Mario RPG Remake. Now, when we go to remakes again, we got Paper Mario in the RPG realm with the Thousand Year Door remake. And that's not coming until next year. The Super Mario RPG remake is actually coming in just a couple of months on November 17th. But Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door, that is actually a GameCube title. And I did play it originally as well on the GameCube. But like so many games in my past, I just never completed it. So for it to be getting a remake and coming out some point next year, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, all right, you know, let me possibly look at going back and playing through this and seeing it through to the end again. So definitely looks pretty cool. Didn't expect to see that. Luigi's Mansion 2 is another remake that's getting the HD treatment, which is not coming until summer of next year. But I'll be honest, I've just very much dabbled into Luigi's Mansion 3 and really enjoyed what I played. It was a lot of fun. Just really, you can't play that game without having a smile on your face. And I have played the first original game on the GameCube at the launch of the GameCube, if I'm not mistaken, it released on. But I never played the second game, so I really do think I want to kind of keep my eyes on this one as well. Now, the final game I wanted to bring up, which is also coming out next year, it's going to release on March 22nd of next year, and this is Princess Peach Showtime. Now, Peach has not really, to my knowledge, had a whole lot of solo opportunities, like with her own game or anything like that. So for her to get her own solo adventure, I think is actually really awesome. And especially when you see what the Illumination Studios, I think is the name of the studio that did the Mario Brothers movie. When you see what they did with her character in that movie, you could kind of really see the potential of her as a mainline character kind of headlining her own game. So this game, it really intrigued me from the get-go just from that perspective. But then when you watch the trailer, it just looks like a lot of fun. It very much reminds me, if you take the gameplay aspects of Kirby and switch Kirby out for Princess Peach. Now, that's not to take anything away from this game, but the reason I say that is because the main gist of this game is Princess Peach goes to the theater to watch the show, right? And when she gets there, the evil grape is what they're calling her. She pops out, and then you have the sour bunch, and they're basically making everything, you know, unenjoyable for everybody. So Princess Peach has to jump in and take over and try to, you know, make everything right again. And the stages are basically different types of plays. And she, Princess Peach, can then use this ribbon that's kind of like a magical ribbon. She can use it almost as like a weapon or to get through different obstacles. But the key thing here in the game is her being able to use the ribbon to transform into a different character type based on the stage that she's in. So say if she's in like kind of a medieval type setting, she can transform into Sword Fighter Peach. Or there is a stage that was looking very much kind of almost Indiana Jones-like, where she dresses up and she's called Detective Peach, and she's trying to figure out clues and find lost artifacts. So it just looked really fun, to be honest with you, and different puzzles and things like that that you can do, and just the platforming, combat, and animations and graphics. All of it looked really, really fun, to be honest. So I'm actually really excited for this game. And out of everything that was announced at the Nintendo Direct, besides Mario RPG Remake, that was probably my most exciting title for me coming out of the show. So Nintendo still doing a lot of great stuff, even though a lot of it is remakes and remasters for the Switch. But as we all know, if we've been following the news, it is pretty pretty good authority that the Switch 2 is within a year or two of releasing, and Nintendo is probably trying to fill the gap, so to speak, of releases, brand new releases, between now and the release of that console by doing these remakes and remasters, because they've already said Breath of the Wild 2 is their last like major Zelda game for the Switch, and they're moving on to a brand new Zelda type series, and I guarantee you it's for the next Switch. So I can't wait to see all the details on that when we get them. Probably won't be until sometime next year, but great job, Nintendo. Great show. Had a lot of great stuff to show off. So now we're going to switch gears and talk PlayStation. Gamers, the last PlayStation event where they showed off a lot of different games and gameplay of Spider-Man 2 and the trailer for Gran Turismo, it was very much, I would say what I had seen, at least online, was more negative than positive response and feedback. And I wouldn't say that I thought that it was a bad showcase event, but compared to what they had done just the last few before it, I mean, man, it was way under what they are capable of and what I think they have set the bar for themselves for as far as the gamers' expectations out there and everything like that. So going into the state of play, I mean, typically like they always do, the state of plays are mentioned just days before they actually go live. So it was very exciting when I saw they were going to have one. I know obviously they did from right at the announcement say that it was no first party titles they were really going to focus on except Spider-Man 2. It was really going to focus on third parties and indie games, which, you know, I'm perfectly fine with that. There's a lot of great stuff that comes out of those different development teams, whether it's third party or indie. So the first thing I have got to start with is Spider-Man 2. Gamers, I'll be honest, this game has not been at the top of my most wanted list. Don't get me wrong. I very much wanted to play it. I've been excited to play it. But when you look at everything else that's coming out this fall between, you know, some that's already out, like Starfield, Mortal Kombat 1, and then we have in the month of October, Assassin's Creed Mirage, Alone in the Dark got pushed back, but we still have Alan Wake 2. These are different games that I was very excited for, that I would say I was more excited for than Spider-Man. Now, I'm not going to say that Spider-Man 2 has now taken over any of these other games as far as my hype level, but just individually, Spider-Man 2, my hype level has massively increased after this most recent focus on it. And I gotta tell you, just looking at what Insomniac is doing within this game world and with these characters is phenomenal to me. I mean, first we got to see really, it just blew my mind seeing the wings added to each Miles and Peter's suits. Oh man, just the implementation of wings to the suits and how that affects traversal, I would have never imagined the impact that that looks like it should have on traveling around New York City. Now, just the speed and the combination of mixing and swinging and then you go to wings and swinging and wind and just the velocity and the sense of speed and oh man, it just looked amazing, to be honest with you. And I am probably most excited about that aspect. But it does go neck and neck with two of the other bigger things that they talked about in this event. And one of those things was talking about how they were expanding the map. Now, a long, long time ago, one of my episodes, I talked about what I really wanted to see in Spider-Man 2 after I had finished Miles Morales Spider-Man. And part of it was to see more of the other five boroughs. There's five boroughs in New York City, and you know, we've really only focused on Manhattan as really the focal point of the last two Spider-Man games. And I really wanted to see the Insomniac team develop and expand into these five boroughs, and we are getting that with this second game. We are going to see Queens and Brooklyn in this game, and man, they look pretty massive. And it looks pretty amazing what you get to do in those respective areas. I mean, Peter obviously is from Queens, and he's got the different neighborhood. He's got his high school you can go to and different side quests and people you can meet up with. Miles, he's got his school that he goes to. He's also got his neighborhood. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that you can do within these environments. And the way that you're going to come across side quests and things like that, the team wants it to be kind of organic or natural. Like you're kind of swinging through the city and you see something weird and you want to go investigate and check it out. That is how Insomniac is trying to approach side quests for the most part within this game. You also can still have a lot of what was done, especially in Miles, where Genki would reach out to Miles and say, hey, you know, these people have, you know, this need. Can you go help them? Or the social media app that was in Miles Morales, you could actually use that to access and see different side quests that were available to you at a given time. So there's all these different things that they're doing. And man, highlighting the Lizard boss fight, seeing Lizard in the game and seeing what the just the visuals and the character design of him. And just, I got to tell you, I am just massively impressed with this last feature here I want to talk about, which is character swap. Because that was another thing too, is going into this game, before we got all the details, it was like, are we going to have an option on the main title screen of Peter Parker or Miles Morales? Are we going to be forced at certain points to switch back and forth to where we never have control over who we play? It's up to the developers to decide when they want us to play as whoever. Or is it going to be like Grand Theft Auto 5, where at any point in the game, you could switch between characters? Well, gamers, I'm glad to say, to be honest, that it's like Grand Theft Auto 5. At any point, pretty much, you can switch between Miles and Peter, and it's instantaneous thanks to that speed of the SSD inside the PS5. Whew, it just looked awesome. I mean, you press whatever the button is, it zooms out and then zooms in real quick back into the city wherever the other character is. Not as long as what it was in GTA 5, obviously. The tech is, I mean, just the SSD alone. But bottom line is, it looked really, really cool. And just the instant almost back and forth between the characters. There is just so much that I got hype for this game, seeing it in action and knowing what it's actually going to be. And being, honestly, at this point, gamers, right at a month away from release for this game, I am more stoked than I ever have been for this game. And I cannot wait to get into it. Now, the next game I want to talk about is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. That game is coming February 29th of next year. We got the release date off of the trailer, the latest one on this past event. That was the big deal, is we finally got the release date. We'll see if that sticks. But this trailer was awesome. We also got a lot of details about the fact that this is open world, whereas the last of part one of Final Fantasy VII Remake was very linear, and there was, you know, kind of biomes and bigger environments, but it wasn't straight open world, whereas they've said this is open world. A lot of cool standouts in the trailer to me, honestly, was the chocobo racing, which was a huge feature that I spent hours breeding my chocobos and racing the chocobos in the original game on the PlayStation 1, and I see it looks like at least the racing is back. you know, climbing mountainsides as on the back of a chocobo, flying on the back of a chocobo. All these different things just looked really, really fun. And in general, the combat, as always, looks great. The story sounds and looks amazing. Graphically, it looks phenomenal. I mean, there's just a lot to look forward to about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And that's another one, gamers. The remake, I got to get back to and finish that because I never played, I would say, more than 5 hours into it. Now, the original game, I did play through and beat that one. I actually completed that one. But man, it looks so, so good, Rebirth. And February 29th, it's going to be 100 hours of content is what Square Enix is promising for this. So if you know me, gamers, you've been listening to me for a while, you know I will very much be able to put in at least the 100 hours, if not more. So going to be an awesome, awesome experience when it comes out. Now, Capcom was on hand to showcase some Resident Evil 4 Separate Ways DLC starring Ada Wong, which we knew was kind of coming. We just didn't know exactly when, so that should be out very, very soon. And by very, very soon, I mean on September 21st. And then the VR PSVR 2 free update is coming in the winter. So definitely good stuff there if you're a Resident Evil 4 fan and you're looking forward to that different DLC. Now, Avatar Frontiers of Pandora did have a new trailer, kind of highlighting the different story beats of the game and what you can expect. You know, I'm not a massive Avatar fan of the movies. I've never even seen the second one. I saw the first one, thought it was solid, but, you know, not as much as a lot of people thought. It was just this amazing gift of cinema. I think the game looks cool. I enjoyed the game based on the movie when it came out on the 360. But this one, it does look fun. It looks very similar to Far Cry, just not as good as Far Cry, if that makes sense. So I will keep an eye on this one. I just don't know if I'm going to pick it up when it comes out December 7th. I may wait on a sale or just may end up passing on this one with so much else coming out in just the next few months. So Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, we did see that new trailer for it. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about, gamers, if you know me and my show, you know I consider myself a controller freak. I get obsessed over different controller colors and designs and themes. And Sony did not disappoint me at their latest event. We finally got some new colors for the DualSense controller. We haven't seen, in my opinion, yes, we just got the Spider-Man DualSense, which I did make sure to get and purchase. But as far as just colors, just your basic color scheme, we haven't gotten those in a long, long time. So to see three brand new colors highlighted was actually really exciting for me. We got faceplates as well of the same colors. And those colors are Volcanic Red, Cobalt Blue, and Sterling Silver. Now, the difference between these is they aren't just the base matte color. They are actually kind of a metallic hue to them. So they do look different, but it is very similar, I'm not going to lie. The Volcanic Red looks very similar to what I had, because I have the Cosmic Red controller, and that looks very similar, just it's got a metallic shine to it on the Volcanic Red one now. And the Cobalt Blue, I'll be honest, I want a blue controller for the DualSense collection that I have. But at this point, I feel like if I'm going to get a blue one, I'd still prefer to get Starlight Blue, because Cobalt Blue, even in the description that Sony gives, it says it has shades of purple. Well, when you look at it, it does look kind of purple at certain angles and in certain lighting. And I already have a Galactic Purple DualSense, so I didn't really want two red or two purplish controllers. So I don't know if I'm going to get either one of those. But I'll tell you, that Sterling Silver one looked really nice. Unfortunately, though, the Sterling Silver one comes out at a much later date than the other two, the Volcanic Red and Cobalt Blue. Those two, those come out on November 3rd, and the Sterling Silver is not until January 26th. So I don't know what the deal is there, but that's for the faceplates and for the DualSense controllers themselves. And Sony is calling this the Deep Earth Collection. You know, the last one was the Galactic Collection, I think is what they referred to it as. This one is called the Deep Earth Collection. So either way, I was excited nonetheless to see three new colors shown off, and I can't wait to be honestly having my Sterling Silver DualSense come to me at the end of January. So that was my thoughts on the two events this past week. Did you share my same thoughts and opinions? Definitely let me know. I would love to hear what your guys' thoughts are, what you're most excited for. So that was this week's Catch of the Week. Now let's go open up my captain's log and see what games I've been playing. Gamer, since last week when I gave you my first impressions on Starfield, believe it or not, I have dropped another 34 hours into this game for a total of 44 hours. And I can tell you right now, I have not even scratched the surface of the thumbnail of the surface of this game. It is absolutely insane the amount of content that is here for the player and what I have just gotten literally lost doing in this game world. It is at, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to backtrack a couple steps here and say in this game universe, because it is a literal universe to explore here between multiple solar systems and just the planets and moons and asteroids and space stations. And oh my God, there's just an infinite amount of content is what it feels like, to be honest with you. So for me to be where I'm at, 44 hours in, I'll just put it to you this way. The main story has been the least of what I have done. I would say out of those 44 hours, the main story is probably constituted for about 5 hours, maybe 5 hours of that 44 total. So that just tells you how much there is to do. Now, I will say that after I get out of this system that I am in, this star system, I do plan on going back before going into any other star system. I do plan on going back to the main story and playing it for a while, because I have seen online, just a heads up, if you're planning on playing it or at the beginning of playing it, that it is recommended that you play through a certain portion of the main story quests first before you just start exploring the universe. Reason being, there's certain, let's just say, key things that you may want to have at your disposal as a character and as a player once you start really going into the exploration aspects, and things that you may not be able to do when you go to these planets or moons or wherever the location may be, because you don't have certain abilities yet that you get after a certain earlier point in the overall main story. So for me, I was already in the thick of it. I was already in where I'm still at right now, which is the Tau Ceti system. Now, I got to tell you, the Tau Ceti system, I went to this place because at the end of my last discussion with you last week, I was in the city of New Atlantis, which is massive in and of itself, right? Well, I was continuing doing some things, exploring the rest of what I had to see in that city. And through the process of that, I did pick up a few more side quests. It felt like, just overall, I probably had 10 plus side quests that I had picked up over the course of my exploration of New Atlantis. Now, out of those, I would say at the very least half of them were all in other systems, planets, moons, that kind of thing. So I did explore to the fullest, at least as far as I could tell, New Atlantis, as far as going in every shop and traveling to every level of the city and just seeing everything that I could visibly see that I could explore or interact with, talk to everybody, went into all the buildings, that kind of stuff. And I did do a little bit of the progression of the main story there, but I could tell that the next main objective, which was there in New Atlantis for the main story, it was going to require me probably to have some focus on it for some hours at a time. And I was like, you know what? I just kind of want to explore right now. So I made the decision to leave New Atlantis, because at that point, gamers, I had probably spent a solid 15 hours just in New Atlantis, exploring, doing side quests, etc., etc. So I decided, you know what? I am actually going to leave New Atlantis because I want to see what else is out there. I want to fly my ship. I want to get into ship battles. I want to explore the galaxy and go to moons and planets. That's a lot of the big things that I was excited for to do in this game. So I wanted to do that and said, I'll come back to New Atlantis. So the first system I decided to travel to was the Tau Ceti system. And the reason why is because I had multiple quests that were located in that system. Well, let me just give you a perspective here. The Tau Ceti system, unbeknownst to me until I got there, there are 9 planets and 9 moons in that system that you can actually explore. So I get there, and even though initially there was only 2 or 3 quests that were tied to a planet or a moon, there are 9 planets and 9 moons to explore. And the way the game is set up, it actually, when you go to a system, it shows you how much progression you have made in surveying that whole system. Now, surveys consist of basically scanning a planet on the outside, the exterior from space with your ship. And then once you land and you explore, there's a certain amount of flora and or fauna. If it's a habitable world, there's fauna, but mostly it's just flora, like the different rocks and minerals and things like that, that you can mine and pick up and use for resource crafting and things like that later in the game. So my point is once I got there and I saw this, I knew that there was no way that I was going to leave this system
without exploring all 9 planets and all 9 moons. So there's 18 locations here just in this one system. Just a heads up. If you were like me and you're like, you know what? I only got 2-3 quests here. I'm going to go to Tau Ceti. Get ready and buckle up because you're going to be there for a while. Because I have spent probably the last 30 hours almost. I want to say that first 15 hours of play on New Atlantis, plus maybe the first 2 or 3 hours before that, was the only time that I've spent outside of the Tau Ceti system. So everything else since then has been 100% focused in and around that system. Now, the first planet that I went to was Tau Ceti 7. And first off, there was a quest that was leading me to the planet. And when I get to the planet, basically every planet has these different locations, and a planet or moon has a varying number of icons, locations that are important to you, whether it's a cave or a research center or a robotics facility or a different mining facility or a mineral deposit, some kind of beautiful, fantastical geological design with crystals and things like that. There's craters from asteroids that have, you know, come before and crashed into the surface, ships that have crashed into the surface that you can, there's just all kinds of things, right? So I explore Tau Ceti 7. And when I'm going here, the first thing that it takes me to is this facility. And it's a robotic facility, a facility that produces these robots and is kind of mining the lava and the minerals around a kind of a volcanic location. And as I went through and explored this area, it was awesome because there was just so much variety in the location and a story behind what was going on in this location. Kind of like what I had referenced last week in my episode where I was talking about the story that happened as I explored throughout this one facility and it followed this one researcher. It was very much the same here, but it was a different, obviously, set of characters and circumstances. So it was really awesome, not to mention the design, the level design, the interior, just the level of depth, of density and detail that Bethesda has put into these buildings is just astronomically mind-blowing, in my opinion. It's just amazing. It's really immersive and really just draws you in. So I went through this facility where just, let's just say, some robotic betrayal went down. I got a lot of great loot. I got a lot of great outfits and some new weapons and things to play with, some cool screenshots I took from there. Well, once I finished up here on the planet, I went to the moon. And it's for the first time happened to me in the game at the point of me doing this, I saw the difference in gravity. And it was amazing. It was so fun because obviously gravity is different on a moon than it is on the planet. And you pretty much just, you jump and you just fly up in the air somewhat. And if you have the jetpack, which I do highly recommend to purchase that skill as soon as you're able to, because it definitely comes in handy in general, but it's also a lot of fun in circumstances like this when you're on moons or lower gravity locations. So I'm sitting there and I'm flying around, popping my jetpack every couple of seconds to keep me afloat in the air and just kind of seeing how long I can stay up there and, you know, using that as my traversal method as opposed to walking or running. And it was just a lot of fun. Well, on this moon, there was a really awesome location that I got to explore. It was my first abandoned hangar. And all across the star systems, there is this lore within the game universe of the colony war is this war that took place. And there was a certain group of leaders that kind of built up all these different bases and whatnot all throughout the star systems. And they abandoned them after the war. So the Crimson Fleet, which is kind of like the space pirates of this game universe, they have taken up shop and kind of taken over a lot of these locations. So when you go here and I come up across this hangar, it's an abandoned hangar that has now been taken over by the Crimson Fleet. So it was just really awesome to explore. And what I love about what Bethesda has done is there's just different layers and levels to all of the different locations that you go to. For instance, this hangar has a massive underground area, which is where the top opening is sealed when you first get to the hangar, but as you explore the top area. But once you go into a building that leads into the underground aspects of the hangar, oh man, you get down to the ship bay, and right there, when you get down in there, these massive doors open to show access to the stars and to the surface of the moon, and that's where ships would take off and things like that. It was just awesome to explore. And again, same thing. I mean, there was just a ton of credits to pick up, which is the currency in the game. The different interactions with the Crimson Fleet, getting a lot of XP from that. Loot, obviously different. All kinds of different things you could want to hope to want to get from these areas. Upgrades to your weapons and all that kind of stuff. So thoroughly enjoyed doing that. And loved my time on this first planet and moon. Now, the next place I went to was this Tau, T-A-U, which is the name of a corporation within the game universe, Tau Gourmet, a production center for them. And I'm going to speak to you about that in the segment next after this one. So we'll go back to that in the next segment. Let me just say it's some good stuff there. So moving past that and kind of going forward with some of the stuff I've done otherwise, there were other missions that just kind of paraphrase real quick because I can't go into every little detail. We'd be here for hours if I did. I had a mission that took me into an involvement with multiple families that were based throughout the Tau Ceti system. And I got to learn that there were some, you know, the Crimson Fleet, the space pirates, they had destroyed different satellites, preventing communication from these families. And so it was tasked by me, by one of the family leaders, to repair these satellites. But the problem was the satellites were guarded by the Crimson Fleet space pirates and their ships. So now I was finally able to get some hands-on time with some excessive combat. It's not combat training like at the beginning of the game or just, you know, here's the controls for space combat. No, it was actual combat. And it was a good amount of it because there were multiple satellites and every satellite had a group of enemy ships to fight. I'm going to tell you guys, at first I was getting my butt kicked, but it wasn't until I understood and got a grasp on how to actually control my ship during combat where I was just lighting them up after that. And just really kind of keeping an eye on your hull and making sure that the health level of your hull is in good shape. And when that, you can click in the right analog stick to repair the hull at certain points. So keeping an eye on that if you need to, but really just maneuvering the ship in such a way to where you're not getting lit up by them the whole time. Once I figured out how to do that and got a strategy for that, oh man, it was kind of smooth sailing at that point. But let's just say the storyline was just awesome. I mean, between reconnecting these families, having certain family heads that were kind of at odds with each other, kind of reconnect in a positive way, form together to take down these space pirates, and it culminates on this space station. So it was my first time getting into a space station in the game, and it was awesome because, you know, just like what you would think or what I would expect, you fly your ship up to it, you dock at the space station, and then it's just awesome. There's just something for me. I guess I'm a nerd because I love anything space related. Space and the ocean, I tell you guys, those are two big amazing things for me. And just being able to walk through this space station and take out these pirates and know that I'm doing it for a good cause, I don't know, it was just a great storyline. It was a great series of events, and I absolutely loved it. And this is all side quests, gamers. Side quests. So just amazing stuff that I was absolutely loving doing within this game world. So outside of all that, I would say the other biggest takeaways I had this past week, it comes in the form of actually completing research and utilizing and using the workbenches. So I didn't realize at first, I was kind of confused of how to actually use the workbenches in the game world. And if you don't know what I'm talking about here, there's a workbench for multiple different types of things in the game. So there is a spacesuit workbench where you can, you know, create mods to improve certain aspects of your spacesuit or the helmet for your spacesuit, different things like that, as well as your pack. Every pack that you equip, you can upgrade or mod it with certain things. But the thing I wasn't understanding fully is you have to do the research first before you're actually able to create what you're wanting to upgrade or mod about said item. Now, this is not just for spacesuits, because there is a spacesuit workstation, there is a weapon workstation. There is a pharmaceutical workstation. So each one respectively is probably what you would expect or assume. There's also a industrial workstation, which allows you to create and do research on different items that you can use when building bases, which I'll get to that in a second because I had my first foray into base building as well. So ultimately, I found out and realized the light bulb went off for me, and maybe some of you are like, well, duh. But for me, it took me a while, a couple laps to realize, like, oh, wait a minute. What am I doing? Like, I have to do the research first. So there are research stations in the game that you can go to, and you can do research, and you can track the research to kind of keep an eye on how far along you are and what you need for certain research projects that you're doing. But the research station, once you go to the research station and you select the category, like say for instance spacesuits, and then you go in there and there is spacesuit mods level 1, helmet mods level 1. In order to do this, first off, you have to purchase the ability in the stats menu. So I would recommend to look at doing that as well. You have to do it for weapons and as well as spacesuits. They're all individualized. But once you do that and you have access to do these things, then you want to start doing a research project for improving helmet mods level 1. And that'll let you do level 1 mods for your spacesuit whenever you get to, or the helmet, whenever you get to a spacesuit workstation. So understanding how all this works together, looking and seeing what resources and minerals and things like that that I needed, it all kind of clicked together for me, and it just felt kind of euphoric in that moment. So workstations and the research workstation, those are very important in this game. And just the way they work hand in hand with each other, I thought it was actually, I respect it because it's very realistic and very interesting. It may be a little annoying to have to go through those extra steps just to get an upgrade to a spacesuit or a helmet, but I still enjoy it. Now, the final thing I'll talk about this week is base building. So I got a very brief experience with base building because I don't have a whole lot of experience or the skills purchased or the actual minerals and resources needed to create like really cool bases and things like that. But I did a very basic, primitive base that I set up on a planet where I could draw resources and just kind of see how the system worked. And I was worried looking at it from the previews before the game released that it might be a little bit cumbersome or, you know, maybe a little confusing. I did not get that vibe from it. I thoroughly enjoyed what I was doing and set up some mining of resources on the one planet I was doing. More recently, I've actually gone back and built up some areas where I can craft and make the different metal pieces, the structure pieces that are needed in order to create more buildings, or in this case, I need to build myself a storage container so I can actually house my resources, because I'm constantly getting over encumbered still, gamers. Even though I've been leveling up the amount of kilograms that I can carry, it still doesn't matter. I'm still getting over encumbered, and there's just, I don't want to leave any resources out in the wild on the table, so to speak. So a lot of stuff going into that right now, but I have just absolutely loved my time with this game and can't wait to share with you next my highlight of the week. Gamers, my highlight of the week this week is arguably one of, if not the most exciting sequence of events that I've had so far in playing Starfield. So let me kind of paint the picture for you listeners, and let's just say that Spectre, my character in the game, we land our ship on this planet, and I am sent here to answer a distress call, kind of investigate, see what's going on. Of course, you know, no real details as to what's going on here from this distress call. So as I land on the planet and I'm in my cockpit at my ship, the Frontier, I can already see and tell there is a storm raging outside. It's dark. It's at night. The rain is pouring down. There's thunder and lightning. I mean, the ambiance is perfect. So I get out of my ship, and this is the first time I've experienced any kind of inclement weather of any type in the game. So it's pretty awesome because I get out of the ship. The music is a little spooky, I'm not gonna lie, and I'm loving it. I'm walking around and I landed on a hill is where the landing spot was. And as I look down this hill and in the distance, I can see the facility that I was sent here to investigate. It is this Tau Gourmet Packaging Facility. And it was known for all the different kinds of meats and just processing that went on here with cows and other livestock.
It was a packaging plant for those different foods and goods that it sent out throughout the galaxy. So this is what I'm looking at, and it just looks awesome. It's just this landscape with the storm and everything. So I eventually make my way to the little outpost that seems to kind of almost be, I guess, maybe like a security check-in building that overlooks the valley below where the actual facility itself is. And as I go in there, I find different officers who've been killed. Looks like there are giant, deep scratch marks that are in the floor, on the walls. There's blood on the walls. And then I see a picture, a poster, which has to be an homage to the movie, The Thing, because it's talking about an outpost on a specific location or ice planet or whatnot, and a creature that's stalking this group that's working there. So if you ever know anything about or have seen The Thing, you'll know what I'm talking about. So this clearly had me thinking in that frame of mind as I'm further exploring and going into this facility. So I don't get a whole lot of detail in this security check-in building, but as I go down, I'll be honest, I'm a little nervous because as I go down the stairs leading to this valley and where the packaging facility itself is, there's this insanely loud roar of obviously a pretty sizable creature out there in the dark somewhere. Well, as I get closer to the facility, there is still one survivor that's inside that reaches out to me. And let's just say that there is a sequence of events that happen here that were pretty awesome. You explore the facility, you basically have a timetable to try to set up some defenses before the thing that you hear in the darkness comes back to the facility. And I don't want to spoil, too much detail anymore, but let's just say that, man, it was just an awesome experience. And had me on the edge of my seat just about the whole time. I absolutely loved it. And this was just kind of like a side quest. This was not anything to do with the main story mission. And that's one thing I love about this game so much is the side quests. Pretty much everything you do in this game is just awesome. There's just some great story behind it. There's depth behind it. Oh, but that was clearly, easily my favorite, my highlight of the week, as it were. And I can't wait to see what this game brings me to discuss next week as my highlight of the week. So now let's go open up a chest of buried treasure gaming tips I have for you in Starfield. When it comes to being over-encumbered in Starfield, I went really hard into that last week, and it was a massive frustration of mine. I'll be honest, a week later, it is still a frustration of mine. I can't stand having to worry about the amount of items that I have to pick up and the amount of weight that I have, capacity, as it were, on my character to be able to hold what I want to carry. I'm just thankful that Bethesda chose and Starfield to not make you walk at a crawling snail's pace, because that was the even more infuriating aspect of it in those other games, as you would literally just might as well have been crawling in the other games when you get over encumbered. So at least you can still move at a regular pace, but they still get you with the oxygen drainage that I talked about last week. So I'm here to kind of give some suggestion as to how to alleviate some of that weight and how to redistribute it, as it were. So there are so many options here, which maybe is one reason why they still opted to keep it in there. But regardless, if you're like me and you're very much explorer heavy as far as your mindset, and you come across a ton of really valuable resources throughout the course of exploration of a planet or a moon, a facility, anything, honestly, there's just tons of stuff to pick up, and it all in some way, shape, and form is worthwhile to pick up. So multiple options for you here outside of just your own personal character. Anytime you have companions with you, they also can carry up to a certain weight threshold. So I would highly recommend anytime you are with a companion, if you get to a point where you're close to maxing out your carry capacity, I would then start handing over anything you pick up afterwards. You can transfer between yourself and your companion. And there can be anything that you have in your possession, you can transfer to them. So first off, utilize your companions, all of them. You can only typically take one companion with you on a quest or exploration expedition, we'll call it. But the one that stays on your ship at the frontier, or if you assign them to one of your outposts, you can still have them carry other items for you. So take advantage of maximizing your crew in that way. There is also obviously the cargo hold of your ship. So don't forget to check the cargo hold. That is kind of also a little hidden area if you're not really paying fully attention like me and my wife. Neither of us realize that, hey, right there at the cockpit to your left, if you're facing out the window, is actually a screen that is what you interact with to access your inventory and transfer items from between it and your character. So maximize your cargo hold. Obviously, you can expand your cargo hold to carry more as well for your ship. You can purchase or obtain in alternate methods other ships and utilize their cargo space as well. And when you set up outposts on different moons or planets, you can also build storage containers. And there are storage containers for each type of resource. That is what I did. I went to a certain spot, I built up an outpost, and I actually built multiple solid, because that's the most of what I've collected so far, at least, solid resource containers, gas resource, liquid resource. And so that way you have multiple options to store all these things because you're going to need them. I mean, you need them for you need resources for research in order to do upgrades or mods for your suits and weapons and everything else. You need resources to craft. I mean, there's just so many things that you need them for that I think that it makes sense to maximize the opportunities that are given to you in the game. So that's my tips for maximizing your quantity of resources on hand. Now let's check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, this week on Captain's Decree, I wanted to discuss something in a more positive way. You know, a lot of times my Captain's Decree segments can be kind of a gripe or a negative thing that I wanted to discuss. This week, I really wanted to highlight something that I feel is a positive thing. So, as I've mentioned before, my wife, as well as myself, obviously, are playing through Starfield. I also have a good friend of the show who's playing Starfield himself. And the very interesting thing that I wanted to discuss here this week is the fact that we are all three playing from a different perspective. So if you don't know, Starfield, just like all Bethesda games, as far as I'm aware, gives you the option of three different perspectives to play from. So the default setting is a first-person perspective, which is what I'm playing the game as. And then you have the kind of an over-the-shoulder third-person perspective. Think of the Resident Evil games, the more recent Resident Evil games. And then you have a third-person perspective that's got the camera is kind of pulled back a bit more than that over-the-shoulder perspective. So the over-the-shoulder perspective, the good friend of the show, he's playing it from that angle. And then my wife is playing from the pulled-back third-person camera viewpoint. And I just got to say that I commend Bethesda for having that option or those options within their games. I think it's great because, you know, it doesn't force someone, like, say, for instance, my wife, to play from a perspective that she's not necessarily as comfortable with. She does allow herself to get intimidated a lot when it comes to games being played from a first-person perspective, even games that she loves, like the BioShock series. She absolutely loves them, but they're played from that first-person perspective, and she also gets kind of intimidated and lost in her head because she doesn't feel confident playing, say, your typical first-person shooter, like a Call of Duty or a Halo or something like that. And look, I know as well as most of you listeners out there, just because the game is from that perspective doesn't mean that it's a run-and-gun shooter, but she just kind of lets herself get intimidated in that way. So I think for people like her, it's awesome to give that just base option of first or third person. But then to also have the over-the-shoulder option as well in third person, I think is great because me personally, I like that over-the-shoulder third-person perspective most. Ever since we got Resident Evil 4 back on the GameCube, that has been probably my preferred perspective for third-person games, at least in a more tightly wound environment or exploratory type environment. I like that perspective to be able to allow me to see more detail. Now, I get it, the pull back camera is good when you have massive environments and when you're wanting to see more of the environment around you. So I do think it's good to have that option if you kind of go back and forth. Say in Starfield, for instance, if you're inside in an interior environment, exploring a research station or something like that, maybe that third person over the shoulder perspective works great. But when you step out of that station onto the planet or moon's surface and you got this massive environment in front of you, you can
tap the back button again, or the view button is what it is in the Xbox controller, and it'll zoom back out a little bit more so you have a better perspective in these bigger environments. So I just want to commend Bethesda on that. I just think that's a really awesome option, and one that I'm not saying every game needs to have that option, but I do think that it's one that a lot of other games out there would and could benefit from, just giving the player the option, because I think that more and more that's where we as players, we like to have that option available to us, whether it's an option to play around for hours in photo mode, as I tend to do, or we prefer to play from a first or third person perspective. So I just want to, again, commend Bethesda for that and just think that's an awesome, awesome feature that I would love to see more game developers implement into their games in the future. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram and Threads at Lost at Sea Gaming, as well as on X at Lost at Sea, GAMIN1. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.